The following is Brother John's talk on tape 37, given on the 29th of October 1964, which was badly recorded. Before the sitting started, Mr. Flint had called me Ada in fun. When Mickey came, he said, "And how are you, Ada?" "Me? Oh, I'm very well, thank you, Mickey." "Mickey, nice to see you." "Me? Nice to see you, dear." "Mickey, are you running around busy?" "Me? Yes, indeed." "Mickey, I bet you are too." "Me? Yes, I have already done two services this week." "Mickey, two services? That's pretty good going, ain't it?" "Me? Yes." "Brother John, bless you, my child." "Bless you, Brother John, dear." "My love to you, Brother John, and mine to you, child." "Me, thank you." "Brother John, all around and about us, unseen by you, are innumerable souls striving and endeavouring to the best of their ability to influence, to help, to guide and uplift humanity, and so few are they in your world who are conscious of this tremendous effort that is made by us. The ties that bind us are strong. We are so entwined together, we on this side of life and those on yours, so entwined are we, that as you yourselves follow out the pattern of your daily lives, so are we conscious of all the effort and the mistakes that are made. For as you in your world suffer, so also do we. For we are entwined together by a power which is life itself. We are, as it were, all the same spirit. Though we cannot define spirit in words, yet it is the very life force itself behind all that exists. And as we are entwined with you, with this bond of love, this bond which is so powerful that words cannot describe, so are we bound together with all forms of life, no matter how lowly they may seem to be in the scheme of things. For if we are of the same life, that time itself is unimportant. That time is but a material condition which eventually for the human soul passes. So we are, in a sense, entwined with all manner of beings, all forms and conditions of life. And if man could but look around him and see in nature the lessons that are waiting there to be taught, the illustration in nature itself of life, how nature itself responds naturally to the unbroken laws of the universe and of God, man could follow in many respects the natural course and sequence of events. If he could see, as in the seasons, the coming change that takes place at this time of the year, and the winter that follows, and then the spring with new birth, and the summer that comes, if he could take lessons from nature, if he could see the wisdom behind all that nature provides and all that nature does, if man could realize that he is, by his very nature, part of a great plan, a plan which embraces all conditions and forms of life, that there are the lowly conditions going through, gradually emerging to a higher state, so there are, in man himself, great possibilities of change, great possibilities of reawakening, upsurging, breaking bonds that chain and bind him through ignorance and fears. Nature knows not fear as man knows fear. Nature has its instincts. Nature has its inner consciousness and realization, and by that moves and breathes and has its being. Nature is not afraid. Nature responds to all the coming changes that must be in a natural form, in a natural way. All that has life lives in some form or other. Though it may go through the process of change, still the fundamental life force is there. Yet man fears death. Man fears the change that must come in himself as he grows older. He cannot see that in age there should come a greater realization and a greater wisdom and a greater reawakening of his oneness with the divine. He fears death because he feels and thinks that it cuts him off forever from all the things that he has known and loved, and all the peoples that have constituted his life, and yet it is not so. It is only that which appears so, because man is blind and is ignorant, inasmuch that he can only perceive on a low material level. He cannot see that all the changes that must take place within himself are nature's way of gradually leading him and bringing him to a higher state of consciousness and being. Nature knows not fear. Although there are many things in nature which appear on the surface to be avoided if possible, things that seem sometimes unjust, perhaps, and make one feel doubtful of the purpose and the meaning behind the manifestations that may happen or arise, but nevertheless, in all life there is a purpose, there is a reason, and, of course, there is an answer. Man need not fear. It is this ghastly fear which unfortunately divides him not only from his fellow man, but from the kingdom of nature, and the animal kingdom as well in particular, which divides him particularly more so from those who come from this realm of spirit to enlarge his mind and to guide and uplift and help him. So it is unfortunately that man dwells and lives in a furtive way, full of fear, full of uncertainty, full of doubt. He cannot and will not understand that all that transpires for some reason or other, it has a meaning. It may not always seem so. Man is inclined quite often to dread and to fear where there should be courage and hope and realization and understanding and knowledge. We who come to you, we know that the earth life is important. It is vital. It is essential and necessary. And it is the evolving of man through natural causes and conditions which makes it possible for him to enlarge himself mentally and spiritually. In other words, it is the preparatory school of life, and though sometimes the lessons are difficult and hard, and the way seems long and unsure and uncertain, man must remember and realize that it is important and essential, and if there is great problem, great cause for sorrow. Oft times it can be traced to man himself. Man himself, through fear and uncertainty, makes and creates barriers. He creates situations in which he finds himself to such an extent overwhelmed and so in himself concerned that he brings to himself in consequence untold, unnecessary misery and unhappiness. Life in your world was never intended, as far as it is in our power to understand, that it should be necessarily easy, or that it should be as tranquil as perhaps man would wish. I think we must look upon this earth life as an essential school in which we must learn our lessons from all the vicissitudes, although it is true that many of these vicissitudes need not be. If man lived as he should live and think as he should think, then many of the things that cause distress would disappear. Man himself, of course, over generations of wrong thinking and wrong living, has brought upon himself many of the illnesses, many of the sicknesses of the mind and of the body. Man must try to realize that when he lives, as I've already said, according to nature's plan, much will disappear that at the moment causes distress. The animal kingdom very seldom is subject to many of the illnesses, for instance, that man is inherent to. Man himself, by his wrong thinking and living, has created these vicissitudes, and if we can get man back to nature, in the right sense, that he shall live normally and naturally without fear, without disturbing elements in his mind, without these attitudes of mind that oft times he has, that certain things should not be done because they are not accepted or not considered the right or correct thing to do. Man has most strange ideas. Man has created false values and lives oft times unnaturally. Man must learn to live to nature, and if he follows nature's plan, he will find his whole life will be changed and his health will improve and his whole attitude towards God and the reality of God in the highest possible sense will be changed. He will understand better. he will have a greater keenness and awareness and consciousness of things as are vital and important. Man was not intended to live, as oftentimes he does, in what you term a civilized society. This is a false veneer, a false front. This is something that man has created, and often it is in itself nothing more or less than an artificial covering which covers up and represses and suppresses his normal natural emotions. Man has guilt consciousness, often over things which in themselves are as natural and are, of course, the law of nature. You cannot combat nature and fight nature. You must be with nature and live with nature and realize indeed, though it seems for you strange to realize, that the animal kingdom has an inner awareness and consciousness within itself. It may not have the power to convey in speech, but it has an inner awareness and consciousness of much that is alive and vital and real that man is completely unaware and unconscious of. Man has, over the centuries, moved away from natural law, and in consequence he has lost the content, he has lost the way, and he has created in himself such fear, and it is this very fear that brings disease, this very fear that brings war upon man. Man must learn to live with nature and to understand and appreciate nature and to live upon the natural foods of nature, and he must above all learn to tune in mentally and psychically and spiritually to the higher forces of good that are emanating from our world, which are endeavouring at all times to pierce his consciousness, to make him become more attuned, more aware, and make him in consequence a better and a happier man. Me. Thank you, Brother John. You have answered all my thoughts this morning. Brother John, it was my intention. Oft times, when I am with you, I listen to your conscious thoughts. They may not be verbal, but they are there, very strong, very powerful. And there are so many things that in your world cause distress because man is full of fear. He fears life. Almost from birth, he is taught by his parents, by his companions, by his teachers, false values, false ideas. He is stifled, he is suppressed, he is told that he should not do this or he should not do that, or it is not good to like that person because one's parents do not like the family. You know, if you can trace back any individual's life, you will find that they are the product of the minds of others, their parents in particular, their environment in which they were born, the schools to which they went, and the teachers that taught them. And as they left school and went into the outer world, though they may have asserted themselves more because they felt more free and were older and in consequence could do as they thought, as they pleased, so perhaps changes came which in some cases were beneficial and good. But nevertheless, if you instill from childhood many thoughts which in themselves are wrong, if you are driven to accept certain accepted ideas because they are the thing to do, then of course you will become more or less only a pattern which others have made and moulded. You are not yourself an individual. You are not expressing you, yourself. You are expressing other people's thoughts and ideas. You are copying other people's ways and accepting their form of life. And you are, in consequence, becoming one of the herd. It is important for man to realize that, though he shares the same spirit, because it is the same spirit by which we all live, nevertheless, he is given a separate intelligence, a separate power to develop his own personality and character, and it is for him to assert himself, of course, in the right sense and in the right way. We know there are many who do many things that cause great distress to themselves and to others because of foolishness and ignorance. We know that youth goes through a period of time which is unstable and uncertain. They are children who have never perhaps really been shown the path and the way. Perhaps they have been shown the path and the way of the parents or the relations or the family, but nevertheless for them they feel in this strange time of change the urge to be different, the urge to be themselves. They do not really know what they themselves should be. They are in the formative stage. but nevertheless it is important for youth to realize that it has a great possibility in front of it, a great opportunity in which it can truly become, in consequence of effort, it can become truly a power for good, but oft times, unfortunately, it has turned to the powers of darkness. I do not have to go into the details which are so common, in which today youth finds itself. Youth seems to be without a leader of strength and character and personality. Youth is fumbling, as it were, in the darkness, and it receives little or no light from those who are older, those who should be more experienced, those who have created the havoc and the vibration and condition in which youth finds itself. It is understandable that they cannot, in some senses, assist and guide, and youth has little faith in the old because youth looks back and sees the tragedy brought into the world by the foolishness and ignorance of their elders in their younger years. It has seen the tragedy and the havoc that has been wrought by two great wars, in which whole nations have been involved and millions have died unnecessarily. It has little faith or trust, and it sees itself in an age where any day disaster could come and all could be taken from them in one swift blow. So it is understandable that youth today is as it is. I do not make excuses. I know there are exceptions. I know there are some who behave abominably. But nevertheless, you must see that youth has been born into and brought up in a world of uncertainty and fear and horror. Man can only find peace and tranquility and happiness when he has the guiding light of the Spirit to shine before him, to guide his footsteps on the path of eternal progression. Man must be given confidence. Man must be given that love and that understanding and that realization of the purpose and the meaning of life, that indeed it is true to say there is no death, for we who come break down the barriers of death. But we know this, that when man strives, when he searches diligently and truthfully for those things which are good, for those things which are eternal and of the Spirit, so he is guided, so he is led, so he is helped. We are waiting on the threshold, knocking at the door of the consciousness of the world. I can only say this, my child, that we truly come with that light which can emblazon the path of the future generations towards peace and tranquility and happiness. My blessings rest with all those who listen to the voice of the Spirit, and to those who may read it, I say, go forth in strength, knowing that we are with you, that which we endeavour to do between us, we cannot fail, for it is greater than ourselves. We are but the instruments of God's love and his will and power, and we shall do to the end of our time all that we may. Though there is no end to time, in the sense that perhaps some people realise, there may be an end to the time in which we shall work and serve among the peoples of the earth, for we then shall be released to go into higher planes to develop and grow in our own stature and our own knowledge and experience. But we serve humanity for this time upon the earth plane, but the time shall surely come when others shall come and take our place. But while you live, my child, I shall work through you and serve through you, and this you know. Me, yes, thank you, dear Brother John. Brother John, my peace be unto you, child. Me, God bless you and thank you. Brother John, peace be unto all who listen to the voice of the Spirit. Peace be with you. Me, thank you, dear.